Hello, and welcome to this session about search architecture in SharePoint 2013. My name is Rune Zachariasen, and I'm a program manager in the Information Experiences Group in SharePoint.
And my name is Thomas Molbach. I'm an architect in the Microsoft Search Center of Excellence.
It's really an honor and a privilege to be here, sharing with you the new SharePoint search architecture. This is a technical architecture session, and as such, we will take you on a journey through the search service in SharePoint 2013. We will go through the major components, and we will discuss their role and workloads as they relate to each other. The point is to give you a conceptual understanding of the search service.
We also have four demos for you, some pretty high level, some very deep. The point is to give you a more practical understanding on how they work on the inside.
In addition, there's a ton of deep dive sessions throughout the conference, and we will try to call these deep dives out to you as we explore the search service. So, okay. Oh. There we go. So, we have divided this presentation into four chapters, trying to break down the search component into four areas, if you like. So, first we will explore the feeding chain, covering the crawler and the content processing component. Then we will take a look into the index core or index component itself. Of course, we will cover the query chain. And lastly, we will also cover the brand new analytics service in the search architecture. Now, let's take a few steps back and look into what really is SharePoint 2013 search all about. Now, as you may be familiar with SharePoint 2010, we had built-in search service in the product itself. And we also shipped FastCert for SharePoint in addition to that. Of course, the Fast Technology Group had a lot of additional technologies that we did not integrate at that time. And with SharePoint 2013, we set out to take all these different components and merge them into a cohesive, integrated search service in the new SharePoint. So, in addition to SharePoint, the search component is also shared inside Exchange. And this allows us to have some scenarios that span Exchange and SharePoint. So, search now spans, with fast technologies, span all the way from Outlook Web Access through eDiscovery that allows you to have eDiscovery across your SharePoint and Exchange installations, through intranet search scenarios, some of which you may be familiar with, and some of which we have extended in SharePoint 2013. We have also an immense investment into the internet search arena. So we can provide a different kind of search, if you like, for your public-facing internet sites. We have some investments in there, like the product catalog and cross-site publishing. In fact, it's better to think about search in 2013 as much more than the original search box, as much of the search features we have is implicit in the feature you use. So you may be using search without even thinking about it because it's integrated into how you consume and how you navigate throughout SharePoint. And of course, we have APIs on top of this, so it allows you to take advantage of this search service itself inside your own custom applications, which you also may distribute through Marketplace. So let's go into the feeding chain. The first component you will see here is the crawl component. And it's, at the outset, not much different from what you're familiar with in SharePoint 2010. Now, a couple of parts of it, workloads from it, has been separated out into a separate content processing component. So the crawler in SharePoint 2013 is more specialized. You have the same out-of-the-box connectors interfaces as you had in 2010, and it's also extensible through the business connectivity services. As the crawler crawls your enterprise, it will also cache the content it finds on local disk for later to send it further for processing into the content processing component itself. All configurations is, of course, stored in the admin database as it's used to. But as you saw from the wide set of scenarios that we now support with search in 2013, Many of these scenarios require a much fresher index than we are used to in 2010. So we have added a new crawl mode to the crawler, continuous crawl, which is basically performing the same kind of workload as the incremental crawl we have in 2010, but it's not scheduled. It runs continuously to pick up the changes. If you are interested to go to a deep dive and learn more about the crawler, we recommend tomorrow's session at 10:30 SPC 044, Crawl and Index All Enterprise Content with SharePoint 2030 in Search. Now, as the crawler finds content, it will push it over to the content processing component. And I should say, maybe, before we go into the content processing component, something else about the crawler. So as in 2010, we store all discovered crawl items in the crawl database. But there is no longer a direct link between the crawl component and how many crawl components you have and how many crawl databases you have. So they scale individually now. So you don't have this interlocked scaling as we had in SharePoint 2010 when it comes to the number of crawl databases and number of crawl components. Moving on to the content processing component. So this is a very specialized node, analyzing content before it pushes it on into the index, trying to find the metadata and the data you really want to have in your index. It is also extensible. And we will look into that in the next slide. I will show you an example, a conceptual example of how it actually executes. So it executes flows, really. And it pulls in dictionaries, also custom dictionaries, and it does schema mappings. And it's extensible by calling out. So you can configure this to call out the content enrichment web service to further enhance what kind of metadata you would like to populate in the index. So we have a simple example here, a conceptual example, of a typical flow inside the content processing component. So on the top here, you can see two very small steps, delete links and security descriptors. And what this does is partial updates, very quickly partial updates into the index itself. So it quickly can pick up deletes, which is a simple operation, and also for security descriptors. So we really efficiently and rapidly can populate ACL changes from the content. So when you change the ACLs from your content documents and site collections, you can get that populated in the index component itself.
And Rune, that means that the dreaded security crawls in 2010 has been, they're performing much, much better now in 2013, right?
Really hope so. Now, of course, we also do full analysis of the content that we send to the content processing component. And here you can see, we will not go into each of these steps, but you can see that we pick up the content by looking it up from the local disk, from the crawler, mapping metadata to managed properties. And you can see here we also detect languages. We have really powerful, fast-paced linguistics here. And also you can see where we can call out, where we typically call out the web service, the extensible web service. If you would like to learn more about this, we have a deep dive on this tomorrow at 5 p.m., SPC 203, Search Content Enrichment and Extensibility in SharePoint 2013. There is, of course, a couple of more extensibility points. These are configurable parts to this. For instance, as you see here, custom entity extraction. But there is also some kind of entity extraction going on straight out of the box. So for instance, we track all the employees you have in your enterprise, and we use that to identify people as entities, and we can extract that directly out of the content you're feeding in. And I believe you have a demo on that.
That's true. So in this first demo, I'm going to highlight one of the new features in 2013. It's called the Smart Title and Author Extractor. And that component is meant to address the issues that you have in most organizations where people save documents with bad titles. The metadata is completely wrong. I mean, you take a template, it has the author of that template, and all the documents get the same author. So let me show you how it addresses the issue with the metadata and how it addresses if you have no metadata. There we go. So to start, I'm going to start by creating an empty Word document, and I can take one of the new templates in 2013. the student report. The advantage of this template is that it actually has a good connection to metadata. So you see that the report title here, if I update the report title, it automatically updates the title, metadata in the document. If you go in here and you can look on this side, you see that there is no title, and it just has me as the author at the moment. If I go in and update, for example, with the firm, and I scroll down and add John Grisham as the author, then you'll notice that it's updating now the metadata automatically. So this document is an example of a document now that has a very good metadata. To make it a little challenging, I'm going to save this file with a bad title. So let me save it just in my desktop for now. We can call it my lab report. Okay. So now we're going to do a step. Normally, I would just upload those documents or save them directly in my SkyDrive Pro folder. And then either you can wait until the next incremental crawl kicks in, or you can kick it in yourself in Central Admin. I skip those steps. So you have that document now here in my SkyDrive Pro, and it's already indexed. So if I now search for the firm, I should get a match, right? Because the firm is the title of that document. As you see, so not only did it get a match on the firm, it also updated the title of that document automatically. The file name is down here as my lab report. You also see that John Grisham is picked up as the author of the document. Now, I don't expect a big applause for this one because it's pretty simple, right? It extracts the metadata and make it indexable. So let's try to make it take it up one notch and make it a little harder. The next document I have, just prepared one called My Word Doc. This document is a completely blank document. It has a title, and I just put in by Barry Wahlbaum and Olaf Birkeland. By the way, this is a capacity planning session for tomorrow. You'll see in the metadata about this document that it has no title, and it just has me as the author. So this should be a little harder. There's nothing indicating that that's the title and that's the author, except for the fact that it's listed on the front page with different fonts. So again, I have updated that to my SkyDrive Pro and indexed it. So if I now search for capacity planning in here, again, the document was saved as my Word doc. But you'll see it has updated the title based on the title, and it has the right authors. You see them over here on the right side. One second. Barry Wahlbaum and Olaf Birkeland. So I think this is going to be a tremendous help for most internet scenarios.
Super.
Or the internet.
So moving on to the index core. There is a couple of things, really deep things, inside the core that we will not cover in this session. But I would like to call out some deep dive sessions for you in case you were here and expected us to talk about them. One would be about security trimming and how security trimming is implemented and how we can customize that. So we have a session on Wednesday at 3:15 p.m., SPC 049, custom security trimming. So if you're interested in security and looking into how you can integrate your enterprise security with SharePoint 2013 security trimming, this is the session to go to. And also about relevancy. So we will not talk so much about relevancy here. And that's why I will call out on Wednesday at 5 p.m., SPC 145, Optimized Search Relevancy in SharePoint 2013. What we will cover, though, is the partition architecture of the index core itself. Now, the index is a stateful component. And one thing to call out here, a big difference from SharePoint 2010, which stores parts of the index on local disk on index nodes, but also manage properties in a property database. That property database is gone. In SharePoint 2013, it doesn't exist anymore. Instead, everything belonging to the index is stored on the local node, local index node. Now, as you have to scale out to handle all your enterprise content, we can also scale out the index on two dimensions, actually. First, we can scale out with multiple partitions. And when you go to the capacity session, as Thomas just talked about, you will learn about the sizing and limits you should have in mind when scaling and planning the capacity for research. But we can just add more partitions in order to handle more content. In addition to that, we also have replicas. So each partition can have multiple replicas, zero or many. And this is how we scale out query bandwidth with the index. So if you're familiar with older fast ESP technologies, we talked about then rows and columns, and that is not what's really here. So rows and columns is gone. We don't use those terms. Instead, we use partitions and replicas. Now, each partition is an indexing system in itself, and only one of the nodes serves as the primary partition node at any single point in time. It can, of course, fail over. And that is the primary index partition node is the one that actually receives the feeding from the content processing component. Now, it sends these forward to the other nodes in the same partition through journal shipping. So indeed, all the index nodes, no matter if there are replicas or the primary, will do indexing in SharePoint 2013. Now, as we get content into the index, the first thing we do is actually putting it straight into memory. As you remember, we have scenarios that require fresher index in 2013 than they have in 2010. So also here we have improvements into index freshness. So whenever you get a new item updated or a completely new item to the index, we lift it entirely into memory immediately. And as memory fills up, we will write those out in chunks, as you can see here. And of course, this will go through several layer levels where we merge them together more and more as we get many of these kind of fragments, if you like. And finally, we will merge the entire index into a master index, something we call master merge, with several smaller merge on the way there. So this is also something to think about when you think about scaling the disk, local disk, for your index nodes, because they have to be able to handle two master indexes at the time of master merge in order to be able to handle it. We can learn more about that in the capacity planning that's coming up. So we have something that I regard as really the most important thing to understand in order to take full advantage of the search service in SharePoint 2013, and that is index schema and managed properties and how we map properties.
Right. Because one of the core concepts, and this is pretty much the same in Fast Search for SharePoint 2010 as well, is the difference between crawl properties on one side and managed properties on the other side. If you want to do something more than just search content that you put in a custom list, for example, you need to create managed properties for them. Crawl properties are all the properties that are coming in from the crawler. So in this demo, I'm going to lead you through the process of creating a custom field in a SharePoint list and making it refinable on the front end. If you want to make it displayable as part of the result template, the process is very, very similar. Okay. So let me start off with the same document library as I used in the first demo. And I'm going to now create a custom column in there. So for example, I want to highlight what conference I used these documents in. So let me add conference, choice. Let's see. We can put in SBC. Build TechEd just as three examples. And then we need to add a little metadata for each of them. So I can go in to each document and edit the properties. And now you see that I have this column as a field. So I put in SPC for the first one. And then I can put in the second one. Properties. I can put in build on this one just to get a little different data. So now I have a list in SharePoint. I have two different fields in there. So now, to be able to set up this mapping, I need to make sure that the crawler finds this new column. So what I need to do is to kick off an incremental crawl. And now I moved into the search service application in central admin under the search SSA, and you'll find the content sources in there. So what you need to do is to kick off an incremental crawl so that it finds the new fields. And then we can go in and set up the mapping. Let me see. And then we need to go into the search schema. In the search schema, you have a list of managed properties. And what I'm going to do for simplicity is basically to map to one of the predefined refinable properties. So I can find something called a refinable string, for example. And then I can filter it. I can take the first one here and just add in. So what I'm going to do is to add a mapping for my new crawl property. So I move down here, add a mapping. And then I can filter on conference. And now you'll see that the new field I have in here is called OWS conference. You have 15 variants because I have practiced, actually. So that's why you see several alternatives in there. Then we save the mapping. And now the challenge now is that I have a mapping. But to make sure that this field is being populated, I need to crawl the content again. So since we did incremental crawl already, the documents are not dirty as such. So if I kick off an incremental crawl, they're not going to be found. So either you need to do a full crawl and go back in to your content sources and do a full crawl, or you need to make them dirty in some form or edit them or something similar and do an incremental crawl. The latter might be very practical in a large organization where you have millions and millions of documents in your index. But for now, we're just going to kick off a full crawl, and that should pick up those documents and make our refinable fields populated. So now let me move to my search frontend and add the refiner. As you can see before I start, on the left side, there is no conference refiner here. So I go in and I edit the page. And we have one web part for refinements, so I edit that one. And those of you that tried to do this in 2010, you might remember that there was some crazy XSLT structure that you had to edit. Oh, you did try it. Okay. Now, the good news is that it's a lot easier in 2013. I mean, not only is it easier, it even shows you a preview of the values in there. And you can go in, you can put in the custom name, conference, we can save it. Now I need to remember to close this one, save the page.
By the way, isn't there a site level full crawl now? I read that.
So, let's say. Runa, the question is if you can mark a site for full crawl.
I don't know exactly. So we have to go in and ask the crawler team to get the answer for that one. But I do believe it's either on site level or site collection level that you can actually have a scoped crawl if you like. Yep.
Vaidi Raghavan has a session tomorrow morning about the crawler, which he's going to go much more in depth. So you can save your question for that one. I just want to show you that we set up the crawler. We have a crawl property in less than 5 minutes, or a refinable property. Thanks. Over to you, Rune.
Okay. Seems that we get all the applause here. Okay, so as I said, this is really the key thing to understand. If you really would like to take SharePoint search to the edge, understand indexing schema, and understand custom property mapping, and manage properties. So I will go through this a little bit again. So when you discover metadata as a crawl property, it will be mapped to a managed property. And if this is a new property that is not mapped already, it will generate a field in index on the fly, or a new managed property if you like. Now, this managed property will not have all these different attributes, like refinable, as Thomas said. Rather, it will be searchable in the full text index, and it will also be retrievable, so you can get it out again from the index as content. But you will not be able to tap into the things that are like typing and query for it on that managed property in itself. And it will not be refinable, and it will not be sortable, and you cannot also decide the accessibility level on it when it comes to anonymous access. So in order to take advantage of all these features, and basically all these scenarios in SharePoint, this is the thing that I tap into to come to life, is these managed properties, and mapping these managed properties to these features. Then you have to do custom mapping. Now, you can do that on two levels. You can do it on the farm level, as we did in SharePoint 2010. But you can also, in SharePoint 2013, do it on the site collection level. And this is important if you have a large organization and would like to distribute ownership and responsibilities and administration of these things. And it also allows you, since many parts of your organization owning their mapping in their site collection, they can actually reuse the same fields in the index. So you are able to then set a physical index schema, if you like, and then map into the same fields. And you can also do aliasing, I mean, so that a field actually has different meaning and a name, even though it's stored as the same field in the index. And also here, just showing the same thing as Thomas said, you can then map a custom crawl property into, if you use custom mapping, into a managed property in the index. So let's move on to the query chain. Mm-hmm. So it's already start on the web front end. So when you look at the search service itself, you would imagine that it actually starts with the query processing component. But rather, I would like to focus on the front end itself, because we have done a lot of investment that's really involved in the query chain. So we have the APIs, for instance, for search is exposed there. The familiar server-side object model that you're used to program against, when you have code running on the SharePoint box, is all there. This is all where you have the management APIs to search in SharePoint. But we have really enhanced the client-side object model in SharePoint 2013. And we have added a new part to it, the REST interface. And these form the remoting APIs for entire SharePoint. And it's really important for our new cloud-based application model. I will get back to that in the next slide. Also, of course, improvement in the search center, which now also take advantage of things like result templates or rendering templates. And as I said, the portals and publishing, the new catalog system, where we can crawl catalogs, where actually the index is now responsible for cross-publishing by putting it into the index, and also by that relieving your content DBs for load. And also the couple of new web parts. I put up two of them here, content search web part and refiner web part, and you saw the refiner web part that Thomas just showed you. So search actually starts right there in the front end. Little bit more about the SharePoint 2013 remoting API. So you may be familiar with our investment in a new application model, the new SharePoint marketplace, if you like, the SharePoint store. So it's much more than the store to it. As you now going forward might have installations of SharePoint on-premise, but you might also have it in the cloud, for instance, through Office 365. It's been very important for us to be able to offer you a programming model that allows you to develop application that can serve both in the cloud and on-premise. So because in SharePoint Online, we don't allow you, really. I mean, we have this sandbox in Office 365 in 2010. But that is something I really discourage you from using. Instead, use these remoting APIs, because we really don't want third-party code running on the SharePoint box. So the search APIs are extended and takes advantage of this as well.
Rune, one of the questions we often get in the field is that now that Fast Search is part of the SharePoint family, can we only use it to search and index and search SharePoint content? I mean, you're presenting some APIs here that look interesting.
Yeah, great question. Saves me for asking you to come to my session on Wednesday. So, yes, of course, we can take advantage of these APIs, and you can create device applications running on Surface or phones or other kind of tablets. So, as you may are familiar with SharePoint 2010, we have the CSOM or client-side object model. But it really requires you to have libraries present, JavaScript library, SQLite library, or .NET library. So what if you are on an application platform that do not support any of these? Then you fall over to the rest. And we are going to show you that on Wednesday morning, 9 a.m., if you would like to come to my session then. And we will show you how to develop Surface RT apps taking advantage of SharePoint 2030 and REST APIs. Thank you, Thomas. So the query processing component, which comes next. Of course, this is a stateless node again, much like the content processing component, in that it doesn't store anything on the local disk. It's also implemented as processing flows, analyzing your query, trying to understand the language, again uses dictionaries. And we have something called here called result sources. This actually replaces scopes from 2010. It's more flexible. I will not go into depth about that. We will call out a couple of sessions for you later on. That might go in there. We also have query rules, something that is also known as the intent framework, trying to really understand what did the user mean when he sent us that query, or the app mean? What did the app mean or the user mean? Trying to capture that intent and trigger maybe even more queries or more refined queries. This is also the place where we do query federation, calling out maybe spanning a query across Office 365 and a SharePoint 2013 installation on-premise, or maybe two SharePoint 2013 installations on-premise. Looking a little bit more into conceptual execution flow of the query. So this could be the query, keyword query flow, trying to analyze the flow input. First thing we do is to try to do query rule mapping, and we will come back to query rules in the next slide. Then, of course, we can do query modifications. Transform your query if we think that we should transform it. For instance, to substitution by dictionaries and synonyms. And then we go through the query router. And this is where we choose the search provider flows. And we can actually choose many in the same go. So we can both have best bets, people search, and the local SharePoint results in the same query by having this in parallel. And of course, after that, then we need to package these together.
And Rune, to highlight a little bit more about the query router, how does that surface to the end users or to the admins? In the front end, because this is a very important feature.
The query rules?
Yes.
Well, why don't we show them?
I'll show them in the next demo. But query rules are a very important part of 2013. We're not going to dive into that right now because it's a whole area on its own, and there are a number of sessions on it. But what's important from an architecture perspective is to understand that while we are processing the query, if we have a query rule that triggers, that brings out in another result set, it is doing another query in the background. It can either be on an internal source or it can be on an external source. So if you go crazy with query rules, you will perform more and more queries in the background.
Yeah, sure. That's important to know about. So if you have programmed against the SharePoint search APIs before, you might know the result table collection. And it's still there in SharePoint 2013. This is where the result table assembler, as I was at, composes all these different query searches that you actually did perform, either against the local SharePoint or an external SharePoint or even external open search. Putting them together, packaging it together in the result table collection, and then sending it back out again. So, as I mentioned, this is the place where we do query federation and also distinguish between SharePoint search and people search. I will point out a couple of sessions for you tomorrow. So at 10:30 a.m., there will be a hybrid and search in the cloud session. SPC 125 will go into how you can integrate Office 365 with your SharePoint 2013 on-premise. And also at 1:45 p.m. tomorrow, we have SPC 191. People search and extensibility, looking into how you can extend people search. Also, what you can see here is that we are actually fanning out whenever a query hits the local index. We are fanning out that query across all partitions. And we are load balancing across the different replicas within the partition. So we can see this is how these different replicas actually scales out and gives you more query throughput or bandwidth. So let's move on to query rules. There's actually three components to query rules. And also, I should mention that Query Rules replaces search keywords from 2010. The first component of a query rule is actually to set the conditions when to trigger a rule. And that could be many different things. It could be segmentation with personalization. It could be a keyword or a term in your query text. Or it could be the client that executes that query that triggers that rule. Then, of course, when a rule is triggered, it performs some actions, typically by using these flows or flow providers that we just showed you. And lastly, we have something called publishing options, which I will come back to. But I would like to really see this demonstrated, Thomas.
Okay. So in this demo, as I said, we're not going to spend a lot of time on query rules, but I will use a query rule as an excuse to show you what's going on under the hood. And this is the demo that's not for the faint-hearted. We're going to go into the logs themselves. So before I start, I need to turn on the logging on the query process and the search process. So now I turn off verbose logging, so we're going to be flooded in the logs. If you work with SharePoint, you've probably seen the ULS viewer. So I'm just going to enable that one right now so that it's capturing my activity. So now you can see that we are getting in lots and lots of events, including query events. So one of the built-in query rules in SharePoint is if I'm searching for an action term, for example, like slides, PowerPoint, or similar, it's going to capture that as an intent to search for PowerPoint decks. So if I, for example, search for Thomas and slide, you'll see that triggers a PowerPoint rule for bringing in a couple of PowerPoint results. It's identifying slide as an action term and just sending Thomas as a query to a result source for PowerPoint decks. So we have set up, out of the box, a result source that only captures all the PowerPoints in our index. So you'll see that we have six results as part of that result block. So we're going to check that one thing. I have another thing that we want to check. That's why we are matching slides. I typed in slide. You see the organic results that comes after the result block. That is highlighting slides. So there's obviously some linguistics going on. The last thing that's a little interesting here is that it is showing only five organic results, but the results page has six results. So let's try to find out why that's going on as well. When I'm going through that ULS log, that's not necessarily your preferred way of debugging everything. But I'm just doing it as an excuse to look at all the messages going between the components. In fact, the easiest way to check the query rules that trigger is to go in and look at the query rules. So if you go into site settings, and query rules can be configured both on a central admin level, a site collection level, and on a site level. So you have pretty good control over where you want your query rules to apply. So I'm just going to use the site collection for now. Doesn't really matter. I'm going to select the SharePoint results. That's the default result source. And now I'm going to test the query that I did. So let's say Thomas slide. And then it's going to show me what query rules are triggered on that particular query. So this is very, very useful. And not only does it show me the query rules, it also breaks apart the terms. So you'll see that it identifies slide as an action term and Thomas as a subject, and it adds a ranked result block. So that's the two results on the top there. A question?
What if you have more than one subject?
So what if you have more than one subject? You could have multiple words plus an action term, but the action term has to come in the beginning or the end. Okay, so I can say Thomas Molbeck slide, and it's going to identify that as a subject. Good question. So now you see this is the easy way to check the query rules. Let's see if we can identify that in the ULS log as well. You notice that the query rule that triggered here was called PowerPoint. So again, I'm going to use the terminal to go into the server. And to find my queries, I can look for, I can apply a filter. So I take the query process. and I look for a message called new request. Message new request. So that should show me the new queries that have been run. Rune, I seem to remember I did one query. Why do I have two queries here?
Go figure. And then remember the query you did inside the query rules tool?
They both Thomas slide. Yes, yeah. So inside of the query rules. Okay, so the index is actually using a query.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the query rules tool also used search, right? And that goes through the same search service. So of course it will show up two times.
Very good. Okay. So that means that the query I'm looking for is the first one here. So if I identify this package, you'll see that it comes with a correlation ID. And one correlation ID is following the whole query from start to finish. So if you want to debug a query, you just grab the correlation ID and you filter on the correlation ID. So let's do that. Close it, and then I need to clear my filter.
This is really geeky.
This is the geek part of the session. Correlation. Okay. So now I have a filter on the correlation ID. As you can see, there are a number of postings in here. Okay, so we need to filter further. I had three things I wanted to check. I want to check the query rule that fired. You're going to find a number of did not fire messages as well, but I'm looking for the one that fired. So I add in a message here for PowerPoint. That was the message. That was the rule that triggered. Now let's open the first one here. And this one says that this query rule has matched the query condition. Okay, so we know that this triggered. Another thing that we might notice here is the last bullet here. This is the dedupe message.
Dedupe, what is that?
Deduplicate. So what it's doing is that if a result is both in the query result block and in the organic results, it's going to remove them.
Ah, that's why you didn't show 7.
Correct. So that explains why we were missing one result. As you can see, it's removing this one deck here. Okay, so that explains 2 out of the 3 things I want to show. The last one was the lemmatized results. So let's see. Let's see if we can change this one to lemma to identify the lemma term. Okay. So here is the package. So here you notice that I search for Thomas slides. It's adding slides to the query. What's more interesting too is that it's adding slides with a weight of 0.2. So the original query term has 1, obviously, and then 0.2 for the lemmatized forms. That means that if it's a clear match on the term you are searching for, it's going to be weighted higher if everything else is the same as the lemmatized forms. So that's also applies to synonyms. Okay, so lastly, I want to show you the query that goes to the index. The last step says the MLO now sends something, something. MLO Mars lookup something operator. Did it not match? Let's try one more time. The MLO. What is wrong with my... I need to cheat. I should get a message called the MLO. Where is it?
Have we lost network connection? No?
I don't know. Okay, you know what? Then let's cheat a little bit. I think that's okay. No, I think I cleaned up that one. I can jump over to the backup deck and show you what that looks like. Because what's important about that message? Refinement. So here you see, this is the last message that covers the whole query that is being sent to the index. And I want to show you this because that package is enormous. And it shows you how many terms that are applied just for security. The first little portion here is basically the term and the linguistics and the other terms. And then the whole rest, you see how far up we are on the page. That's all the security credentials that are added because of the groups and all the stuff that I'm part of. The next slide shows the bottom portion, where you see it just says max length exceeded. And this one is good also to inspect what the default pages are sending to the index. You see, for example, we have the sortable fields. We have the refiner specification here. And this is something that you don't easily see in the front end. OK, so over to you, Rune.
OK, geeky demo. So I also mentioned, Speaking about query rules, I also would like to call out another deep dive session on query rules, because it's really key and really powerful to take charge of the search queries going on in your organization. So we really can moderate what's going on there. So we have a deep dive session on Wednesday at 9 a.m. SPC 143, if you are interested in query rules. I really recommend that. And also, as you can see there, we have something called publishing rules. And this is basically editorial controls with query rules. Because we can use query rules to boost items or promote items, insert result blocks, and further. Now, since we can set configure whether a query rule is active or not, and we can also set the time span within which a query rule is active, it now functions actually as editorial control. So we can actually use it. In this case, you can see an example maybe of a public-facing site having promotions of products. So by having one single query rule, and since content are delivered through search in SharePoint 2013, we can now basically have editorial control and ensure that whatever campaign we would like to have on our website basically starts exactly when we want it to and ends exactly when we want it to without us being there and having to push a button to distribute content. So it's really, really powerful.
I want to highlight that, Rune, because that basically means that if I'm writing an application just for iPad or iOS using the REST API, I can still take advantage of the whole query rule framework and all the other parts of the
Absolutely.
Search engine.
Because we deliver content now by issuing a search query. And since query rules influences and modifies search queries, our search results, I mean, that's basically what we can do. Again. So let's move on to the last area of the search architecture in SharePoint 2013, the analytics service. If you have some long-term memories about fast and ESP products, you might have heard of something called fast recs, fast recommendations. And this is taking those ideas and integrating it into the search system. So this is brand new. The analytics processing component, and if you remember when we talked about the content processing, I didn't mention it, but it had an arrow pointing down to something called a link database. So let's talk about that first. So whenever you do content processing, we extract all the links and anchors in a document, because as you know, how many references you have to a document basically influences the relevancy of that document. But in order to capture all that, you need basically to understand and have an overview of all the content corpus in your enterprise. And you don't know that when you are analyzing one single item. So basically, we're extracting those, putting it in a link database. And later on comes this analytics processing service, picks that up and analyzes the entire index you have, which might be many million items, and trying to figure out what should influence, for instance, this case, relevancy. But you can also do things like click-through analysis. So in Search Center, for instance, whenever you search for something and you click on a link there, this is important too, because that should also maybe boost relevancy for that item you actually clicked on. So we also put click-throughs in the link database. This is also analyzed in analytics processing component through a MapReduce algorithm. And this is called search analytics. We feed those things back into the index. And this is interesting. We feed them back into the index, directly influencing the managed properties of that item. In addition, we have something called usage analytics. And that is events going on your web front end, things like doing a page view, liking a product if you have a public-facing site, buying a product if you have a public-facing site, feeding those event streams into analytics processing. This is what drives recommendations. I mean, if you have gone to Amazon.com and you have looked at a book, clicked on a book there, you might get recommendations for other books that you might like. That's what I'm talking about, item-to-item recommendations. This is built into the product, these event streams.
And Rune, it's worth also highlighting that since this is query-driven, making recommendations personal is very, very easy by applying some kind of user metadata, user history, or similar.
Absolutely. On the next slide, I will call out a deep dive session where you can learn more about personalization and the analytics engine and how you can take advantage of this. But I would also like to mention first before we do that, the analytics reporting database. This is where we store those analytics usage analytics data for reporting reasons. Remember, we also updated the index. But this is so that your business people in your organization can go back there and see what pages is most popular on my website. I mean, and where did those users come from? Those kinds of reports that we are familiar with from SharePoint 2010, but now it's the analytics processing component, actually, that takes care of these things and stores it in the analytics reporting database. So, lighting up with recommendations. So, this is an example scenario of where that makes sense, as I mentioned the Amazon example. So, we have a public-facing site, and you would like to do upsell and cross-sell. And as, if you combine this thing with query rules and promotions, you really have a powerful solution where you both can do recommendation based on user behavior. And this is also what we mean by search is learning by being used. But we can also control that through query rules with promotions. And as you said, Thomas, by having personalization and segmentations to it. And this is what that can look like. You go to an item, and you basically get a recommended item for that item. So this is the outcome, item-to-item recommendations based on event stream analysis. This is now stored in the recommended for managed property. Again, why managed properties and schema mappings are so important. This is where we tap into all this power. And we can also offer up 12 configurable events. So you can configure for yourself, for your scenarios, both public-facing internet sites, but also internal sites or internal scenarios or internal applications. Taking advantage of this.
So Rune, does that mean if I'm building an application using Java, for example, can I just take the events and feed them into the Fast engine?
Basically, yes. Hmm. Again, through the REST API or this client-side OBEC model.
Very good.
The deep dive session will happen tomorrow on this topic at 3:15 p.m. SPC076, deliver adaptive and personalized experiences with SharePoint 2013. And those are really the guys that develop these components going there, so I really recommend that. I recommend the recommendation session. That's cool. And we have a demo on it. Yep. So
the question
I think was if I have an application that uses this feature and fires queries all the time, will that have a negative performance?
I wonder if you should just come up after we're done and we can discuss your specific topic. Well, it got a little long.
Absolutely. I think I have an answer for you, though. But we can take it later on, because I think we need to finish with a couple of minutes here.
Yeah.
So going on with your demo, Thomas.
OK, so I'm basically going to demo the whole recommendation processing. What I've done is to create two pages. I've logged in. So I have here test page A, test page B. I have clicked a few times back and forth on those pages with one user. And then I logged in as a different user, and I clicked with that user as well. And the reason why that's important is because you want to have a relationship from page A to B and from B to A. That's the we found that during testing that enhanced the quality of the recommendations tremendously. Okay, so if we go to the index, what's happening in the background when we click on events is that it's storing those events as input to the analytics engine. So you get one folder per day, and there's a timer job that kicks in. So to illustrate this, I've just captured one chunk of events, and we can open that file so you can look what it looks like. You'll see here, this is the user ID. So you see on the top here that we have 5 events by one user. And then I can scroll down a little bit and click on this one. And you'll recognize the test page A and test page B as part of this. So you basically have an event type as the first one, you have the URL, and you have a user and a date timestamp as input. So what I need to do now is to reconfigure the analytics engine to process my file instead. So I have this one job just reconfiguring it to read from that specific directory that where I store my file. So let's go in and run that one. Oops. Reconfigure. Okay, and then the next step is to kick off the search analytics. So let's see if we can have, so that's an easy step, start usage analytics. What's it called, the file name, start usage. So that's basically just kicking off the usage analytics. We're using that as input to the search analytics job. And since we have very few documents, it's going to be pretty quick. And then let's see if we can find the start search analytics job. So this is a timer job. So normally it runs as a time job. We just grab it and we kick it off right away. So start search analytics job. And this job takes a little longer time. What we can do is also to just reconfigure that script slightly to display the status. So let's do that, display job info. And I mean, the file I had was very, very small. And you'll see that it's already done processing the events. It took only 6 seconds to run. If you have thousands and thousands of events, obviously it's going to take longer. And it's worth mentioning that this analytics portion is based on a MapReduce type of setup, so it can process millions and millions of events. Again, we have a session specifically for that. So now, what happens with the output of this process? As Runa mentioned, but I don't know if you captured it, is that this data is fed back into the index in a field called recommended for. So if I have test page A, it has a field called recommended for example, test page B. So if I do a query on A, I can list all the recommendations for that page and the same with the test page B. So let's do that. The front end. So here's my test page A. Let's go to search. So I'm cheating a little bit of pasting in a long string here. It's basically saying recommended for and the URL for test page A. And you'll see that I get back test page B and I get a number of other pages as well that was part of the same session. Test page B is on top because that was the one I clicked the most during this test. If I now change this URL to test page B, I'd be very surprised if I don't get test page A on top. Okay, so that's the run loop. The recommendations go back and forth. Now I'm going to show you easily how you can populate the recommendation data in your intranet setup. Let's say you have a knowledge base or you have somewhere where you want the users to see other similar items. So let's go into test page B and I'm going to show you a web part that comes with the product that you can just put in wherever you want. Insert web part. Search even content. Recommended items. So this web part basically grabs the URL of the page it's on, and it's displaying without any further configuration, just showing the recommendations for that URL. So it should populate just out of the box. There you go. That's power.
Cool.
Thanks, Runa. Over to you.
And that concludes the four areas of the search architecture in SharePoint 2013. So let's take a look at that again by switching back the monitor here. So taking everything we have talked about, going from the content all the way over to user experience, talking about the new analytics processing components, how content processing is now separated from the crawl component, the different stores, the extensibility points, and how we do query processing. This is the new search architecture in SharePoint 2013. If you are an IT pro and would like to see how do I deploy this thing, how do I scale out, how do I operate this, I would like to call out a session. It is on Tuesday at, sorry, on Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. SBC 095, effective search deployment and operations in SharePoint 2013, how you actually deploy these topologies. And as we mentioned, the capacity planning is happening tomorrow at 5 p.m. SBC 172.
Okay, so I want to just highlight a couple of things around search. We have five hands-on labs. We have the search SMEs populating the search stand in the exhibit hall. And then at the Ask the Experts, you'll meet Rune and me, and you'll meet all the other speakers in the search track at the search lounge. And here is a list of the most similar sessions to ours. We have mentioned them already. And before we open up for questions, I just want to encourage you all to go to my SBC and give us feedback. I need to highlight that in Microsoft, the top score means okay. It doesn't mean that you did a stellar job. It means okay. Anything else is pretty bad. So if you have any complaints, come to us. If not, use the feedback loop. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Any questions? We need to use the microphones.
Please use the mics. So go back and use the mics there. So we will see, do we have the first?
Did you guys rewrite, or did they rewrite mssearch.exe for 2013?
One more time.
mssearch.exe, is that still the same code base, that same program from
So if I understand the question correctly, mssearch.exe, is it the same as it used to be in SharePoint 2010? Is that correct?
Yes.
Partially. So the crawler component, which is part of what we carried over from SharePoint 2010, is still with us. It's only hosting the crawl component. Any other component is hosted under something called noderunner.exe. Another question?
Yep. Yep.
Are there any changes in the hardware requirements for search in 2013? I mean, is it recommended that it be on a standalone server? And then also the other part is, if you are configuring it for high availability over, you know, two servers, how would you configure that and split out the services?
Did you get that?
I have no chance of hearing the question. It's too much noise. Try again.
Okay. The first part was, are there any changes in the hardware or system requirements for search in SharePoint 2013?
Yes. And the hardware will be covered in a capacity planning session tomorrow. It's too wide of a topic to cover in this session.
Yes, absolutely.
So, but yes.
So go to the capacity planning and sizing session tomorrow.
And then the other part, which is perhaps more architectural, is if you are configuring a search farm for high availability, you had perhaps two servers, how would you split up the services to obtain this?
So the question was about high availability. It's covered in the same session. So we had to split those two because the topic is too broad.
But you might also go to the deployment and operations session on Wednesday to get part of the story of high availability as well.
So question on this side.
The concept of partitions existed in FS for SP, but it was quite different. Each index had five partitions. It took like 3 million items or so without a hit on index performance. So the new concept of partitions, is that carried over? Is that still present? Or that they're completely new paradigm?
Can we heard something about partitions and carry?
The partitions in Fast Search for SharePoint are the levels on the slide that you had earlier. And the partitions in SharePoint 2013 Search are basically the same as what was in SharePoint 2010 Search, not Fast.
Oh, thank you, Barry.
Just try to normalize the
terminology.
Vocabulary.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Next.
Where is the data index folder, and do you still use FixML for storing index data on disk?
Oh.
So the question is about FixML. The FixML is gone. And to talk more about it, I think we again refer to the capacity planning session. But there are definite savings on the disk space in 2013, maybe as much as half. But go to the capacity planning session to check it out.
And what directory?
I didn't hear it.
I didn't hear
what,
it.
What directory?
What directory?
I show that in my demo.
Okay.
We'll show it tomorrow. They're using something called mini file systems for a lot of the files. It's not as easy to access as in 2010.
And the directory is configurable where you would like to have the search index resting.
Next.
Question here.
I have questions about reporting and analytics. In Fest, we had Clarity, which provided a number of interesting graphs about indexing and search performance. Do we have something similar for analyzing that kind of data in SharePoint? And also, if you recrawl the content, what happens to the usage information that was generated as a result of other behavior in the system?
So maybe you can cover this last part first, Runa, about what happens to the usage information when you're crawling the data.
The usage information when you crawl the data?
Yes, when you crawl data, what happens with the
if you
usage
have to
processing?
Recrawl, if you have to recrawl the information for whatever reason, rebuild your index,
the links,
essentially.
And all the stuff that is extracted during crawling time.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't get the intention, I think, of the question. But what happens during crawling and processing is that we detect anchors and links inside your documents or items, and we store them in the link database for later processing, because the analytics service is what analytics processing component, it was really analyzes all your links. And that typically happens later because it needs to understand your entire corpus. So it cannot happen during indexing of that single item.
And the second part of the question, I think, was about Clarity and how do you do monitoring of 2013 search?
Right. And we have Clarity in ESP. What kind of features do we have in SharePoint to provide the same level of reporting on what the search system is doing?
Right. So in ESP, you had a Clarity tool because we didn't have any open APIs for monitoring. In 2013, we have full support for SCUM. So that's the preferred way to do monitoring. And the rest I'll refer to the Knut session.
Yeah, it's about deployment and operations of the search service in SharePoint 2013. It happens on Wednesday.
Wednesday. Thank you. Next.
Hi, guys. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just have three very short questions. The one is the content source can be pointed to a specific web application, but in a multi-tenant environment, the tenants are site collections of a shared web application. Is it possible to point your content source to the different tenants, therefore the site collection levels?
Runa, did you capture the part? There was something.
I didn't get the question. Could you
repeat
the question?
So the question is, for multi-tenancy, I want different content sources scheduled for each tenant. Therefore, I need to bring the level of the content source down to site collection level, and I want to know if that's possible.
Mm. Is this a question about Office 365, since you say multi-tenancy, or multi-tenancy in general?
In general. So basically, I want to know if the content source can be pointed to site collection level instead of a web application level. Mm.
I think we will have to refer to the deep dive on the crawl.
Okay.
I think that happens
That's tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning, yes.
Sure.
Because it's a very specific crawl question.
Yes. Okay,
and multi-tenancy part of it, I don't know, actually.
Okay.
So I would go there.
Great. And then the second part was in SharePoint 2010, the list item global unique identifier was not part of the crawled properties. I wonder if it's exposed in SharePoint 2013. So I can actually do a full SQL text query against a specific list item GUID. Also something I need to maybe...
Yes.
Yes,
there is actually a flag that you can set up so all the crawl properties become managed properties. It's turned off by default.
Okay. Because I found that the item ID is exposed, but that's only per list, so it's integer. But if you want to search for a particular document across different lists inside one site, I want to use the GUID or some type of unique identifier to search for that particular document. I don't want to use the URL or the path, but rather a GUID. And what I read was in SharePoint 2010, the GUID wasn't exposed.
Again, very well. I'm not able to come up after, and then we can talk about it.
Thank you. And the last thing is the continuous search mode. Will that put an overhead on the performance of the server?
The continuous crawl?
Yes.
So again, Vaidi's going to talk much more about it. But when you have a large full crawl going on, the continuous crawl will still trigger at time intervals and take care of everything that has happened since the full crawl started.
Okay.
So and it will take care of the differences if there is any while it's doing the full crawl.
Okay.
So the continuous crawl is actually very powerful from that perspective. It's going to pick up stuff that happened since the full crawl started.
So if a user uploads a document and 2 seconds or 3 seconds later search for that document, will it still not find it?
I think we're talking about 3 minutes for a basic crawl. So you're not going to have seconds or yet.
It Fantastic. Also depends on how heavy crawl load you have at any point in time, and how big your index is, and how many nodes you have, how you scale out. Because you can scale out crawl components individually from content processing components, individual from how many index partitions you have, individual from how many mirrors you have in each index partition. And they all contribute or become bottlenecks depending on how much load you have on the system. But we have some guidelines of how much hardware you should allocate to each of these different components and how many of them you should have depending on how much load you expect. And that is the capacity planning and sizing session that happens tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Thank
you. You're welcome.
Next.
I see you have a custom security trimming session, and I hope to make that. But in case I can't, maybe you can answer this question real quickly.
Yep.
FAST did not support the iSecurity Trimmer 2 interface for query time security trimming. Is query time security trimming going to be possible?
Oh, they're very good that we actually have the security dude sitting down here. So,
go talk to the guy with his arm in a cast.
He actually coded so fast, so he actually lost feelings in his
you
arm
know,
there.
In fact, we actually have to wrap up here. So I say the rest of the questions just come up to us after we're done, and then we'll close.
I have
up
one
now.
Question. What is the support for SharePoint object model for searches? Is there like during the fast time we were also having FQL and all those things? So
it supports KQL and FQL from the REST perspective.
Yes. So we support both query languages, both the fast query language and the SharePoint query language.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank